apparently, they're stressed.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Remember those bank stress tests the White House has been conducting? The Wall Street Journal reports this morning they're apparently starting to show some inadequacies in the system. Namely, two of the nation's biggest banks that may need to raise more capital. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
Government regulators have reportedly told Bank of America and Citigroup they'll need to raise more money. But the journal says both banks are objecting to those preliminary findings. They're expected to respond to the government with detailed rebuttals. But you have to wonder, if these two banks had passed the Fed's stress test with flying colors, would anyone have taken the results seriously?
No. These tests have to be tough enough to show that these large banks are indeed in need of extra capital.
Edward Haddis, an economics editor at Breaking Views in London, says that much has been obvious to almost everyone for months.
The estimates from the macroeconomists of how big the losses in the financial system in the United States and around the world are just too big to suggest these banks are really strong enough to survive without more money.
Haddis says other large banks will probably be forced to raise more cash, too. But it's unclear if any will come from private investors. The likeliest scenario is that the government will end up taking a larger stake in troubled banks. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
The swine flu has done a number on globetrotting and trade in recent days, but a spokesman for the World Health Organization, the WHO, says it won't recommend travel restrictions and border closures like it did with the SARS outbreak. It says infected people may not show symptoms at an airport or border crossing, and the measures could prove ineffective. Swine flu, of course, continues to make markets a little achy. Dow lost about 0.6% yesterday. NASDAQ lost nearly 1%, as did the S&P 500. European shares lower across the board. Asian markets closed down. The Nikkei gave back about 2.7%. Sharp Electronics and Nippon Steel, among the biggest losers there, both reported quarterly losses. Honda reported today it swung to a $3 billion operating loss for the latest quarter. That beat analysts' expectations. For the financial year, which ends next March, Honda says it expects to be in the black. Barely. We're just a couple of days away from a government-imposed Chrysler deadline. They have to get their financial house in order, a hookup with Fiat, or Uncle Sam stops the gravy train. For a partnership with Fiat, Chrysler will get access to the Italian automaker's small car technology. But what does Fiat get? Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Fiat's been absent from the U.S. for two decades. Nobody wanted to buy their cars. But, says Dave Sedgwick of Automotive News,
these days they're making cars that are much more stylish and much higher quality.
To sell those cars in the U.S., though, Fiat needs a dealer network. And that's what Chrysler would give them. Lula Tafe is the former president of Ford's European operations.
Fiat now primarily is a European player and primarily an Italian player.
Latafe's now the dean of Boston University's School of Management. Whether Fiat sells its own cars here or slaps a Chrysler logo on them first, he says the nationwide network is what's important.
Long term, most global auto manufacturers want a presence in North America because this is the largest single automotive market in the world at this point.
But don't expect Fiat fever to hit the U.S. right away. Dave Sedgwick says it could take 2 years for the company to get its products into Chrysler showrooms. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
A new law to protect credit card holders is moving through Congress, and consumer advocates are pushing legislation at state and federal levels as well. They want to crack down on another source of debt, payday loans. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, here's Mitchell Hartman.
Kathy Kimpton is a registered nurse with a steady job. I met her outside a Rapid Cash store on the outskirts of Portland. She just paid off her husband's latest payday loan.
$300, but I know I paid nearly $40 for that $300 loan.
If you've never taken out a payday loan, here's how it works. Say you want to borrow $300. You write a personal check for that amount, plus perhaps an interest payment of 15%. That's the extra $40 Kathy Kimpton was talking about. You post-date the check a few weeks to your next paycheck. If you don't come in and pay the debt, the lender simply cashes the original check. Now, 15% interest over a few weeks may not sound bad, but it works out to several hundred percent annually. Adair Morse at the University of Chicago Business School says there aren't many options for borrowers in trouble.
People go to pawn shops and car title loans and things like this, but these all require some assets that you're willing to put up as collateral. It's pretty much after you get capped off on your credit cards, you really don't have much choice but to go to a payday lender.
The demand for this type of credit is undeniable right now.
Lindsay Metzger is a spokesperson for the Payday Lenders Trade Association.
You know, anecdotally, we're hearing from companies that there are more people walking through the door, there are more people calling, but that's not translating into additional money being advanced, mainly because part of the requirement is that you have proof of steady income. So as people lose their jobs, they no longer qualify for the advance.
Lenders I talk to say defaults are up significantly, borrowers bouncing checks or skipping out, so profits are falling. More than a dozen states, meanwhile, have capped annual interest around 36%. Lenders say default rates are so high, anything less than triple digits puts them out of business. Uriah King of the Center for Responsible Lending isn't shedding any tears.
Somebody that's paycheck to paycheck can't pay off a 400% interest rate loan, plus pay off all their expenses. The payday loan just drives them deeper into the hole.
But finance professor Adair Morse says her research shows most borrowers do understand how much interest they're paying and don't mind. They like the convenience. Better, she says, to limit how much of a paycheck someone can borrow against and how many times they can roll the loan over and pile on more interest. That might keep people from slipping into a spiral of debt they can never repay. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Hey, hope you can join us at our website, marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.